Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. This one is very exciting. We just released the top 100 prospects list, the first of 2019, with many to come throughout the year. But it's been a fun day on the site. A lot of stories going up with that list. And here with me today is Josh Norris.
Howdy.
And JJ Cooper.
Hello.
We're going to dive into the list a little bit, talk a little bit about how it was put together, some of the surprises, some of the obvious guys. I know number one, I don't think anybody was too surprised with who we have
shocked,
there.
Shocked, I said.
I think Vladdy Jr. was the first unanimous of my era at BA.
Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of the first thing that I had down here that I wanted to ask you guys about. Just for everyone, so everyone's aware, I sat in on the meeting. I don't have a say on the votes. I don't follow the minor league guys throughout the year like you guys do. But it's a fascinating process, and it was fun to kind of see how you guys talk through the players and line them all up. So let's just jump into Vladdy. Number one, the consensus top prospect, as you mentioned, Josh. And let's start with you. You've been here less than JJ, and JJ can kind of speak to this to a more lengthy extent. But was it any surprise to you that Vladdy was the consensus number one guy? Were you expecting that? And again, who was the closest guy, I guess, in your tenure here at BA?
Let me say, I think Bryant might have been. I don't remember if Chris Bryant was before me or after me. Mm-hmm. But I will say that if Vladdy had not been number one, if there had been someone in that room who had come in with another choice of Vladdy than Vladdy, he would have been shouted down so roundly that it would have rung from the blue mountains of this state.
Yeah.
There's no one else was even in close to a consideration, I don't think, than Vladdy. Maybe JJ is less strong than that, but
I would have loved to have, I would have had a lot of fun if someone had come in with a well-reasoned, thought-out argument for why someone else other, because, okay, let's take the top three. Wander Franco has not made it to full season ball. So let's take
top
him.
Four.
No, I'm saying okay, take gotcha. Him out of the discussion.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could put Wander Franco, great Appy League season, ahead of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., guy who should be in the majors already, who hit 383 last year, on the follow-up to a great season the year before, on the follow-up to a great season the year before, on the follow-up to being the number one prospect in baseball, who, by the way, made the Baseball America Top 100 before he ever played a professional game, something that Wander Franco can also say.
Yeah.
It's funny, we got criticism today. It's like, why do we not put more international guys on immediately? And it's like, we're pretty aggressive on that. These are 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
We are pretty aggressive on that. But that's what I'm saying. So that really leaves you. It's Vlad, it's Eloy, and it's Fran Tatis, who's number two. And even if you give Tatis, because Eloy, you cannot give Eloy Jimenez a significant defensive bump over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in any way. Mm-hmm. Even if you have concerns about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s defense at third base, he plays third base, and Eloy is a left fielder who is not a great left fielder. So if you're going to argue Eloy, you have to argue that Eloy is a better hitter with more or massively more power than Vlad Jr. And mm-hmm. I don't think you can make that argument. Okay, so then you go to shortstop, Fernando Tatis Jr. Shortstop, better than third base as far as defensive value. And Tatis is better defensively at shortstop than I would say than Guerrero is at third. Mm-hmm. He's going to play there longer. That said, as good a hitter as Fernando Tatis is, I mean, it's not close. It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a truly special hitter. Josh, like, what is the... Because I know you've asked this question to guys, and I've asked questions to guys too, but what is a worst-case scenario, barring significant injury or something, but, like, Vlad Guerrero Jr. just fails to live up to our expectations as a hitter, then what is he as a hitter?
He's merely very good.
Right.
I mean, the way we have him, I mean, I think we had him, what, did we have 80 power on him?
It's 80 hit, 70 power.
70 power.
80 hit, 70 power. I mean, so you if you listen to this podcast, you know how special that is.
Yes.
And then
I remember the first time I saw that Ben Badler, who does the Blue Jay system, put an 80 hit tool on Vlad. I was like, did he mean to do this? This was a few years ago, I think. Did he mean to do this? But, I mean, if there's a guy who has an 80 hit tool.
I mean, it's Vlad. I by coincidence and determination, I saw him, I think, every day in the fall league that I was there last year.
It was not coincidence.
It was partially coincidence. Some days I was chasing matchup and Vladdy happened to play for that team.
Yeah.
But it struck me the ease with which he turned on, you know, above average to plus or better pitches. Mm-hmm. I remember the first game I saw there, he was facing a sidewinder throwing 97. Okay, this will be something. First pitch, 97 in on his hands. He turns on it like it's 50 miles an hour, yeah. And he knew what was coming. Just served it into left field for a double. Like, that wasn't even a challenge for mm-hmm. him.
He hasn't been getting challenged that. A lot.
It'd have been as if you or I were pitching to him, and he was just, whatever.
Yeah, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, but JJ, I want to go back to this since you've been around BA for a little bit longer than myself and Josh. Who is the last guy who either was a consensus, every single person who's voting puts him number one, and if not that, who's the guy who's been the closest?
We mentioned Chris Bryant. I don't think Chris Bryant, I think that's the last one I can remember. I don't remember us having any argument mm-hmm. that didn't have... Chris Bryant, coming out of college, was one of the top three guys in that draft class. Mm-hmm. He was our college player of the year. He hit a bazillion homers in a year where he out-hit many... The bats at that point, home runs were impossible.
Yeah.
And so he hit more home runs than many teams did in college that year. Then he goes to pro ball, and after a very nice debut, and a little cup of coffee his first season, he basically blitzes the minors the next year. He's our easy pick as minor league player of the year. Mm-hmm. The questions that Bryant faced at the time were, how good is the third baseman is he going to be? And, you know, he strikes out a lot. You know, is that going to be, is that going to hold him down a little bit?
Yeah.
And really the answer was no, but that would be the last one where it was like, you know, and again, there have been consensus guys before. It's rare though. It is rare when you have a consensus guy.
Consider that we're coming off a year in which we ended our first process with Otani, Acuna, and
Vlad Jr.
in a three-way tie at the top. Mm-hmm. And we had to get, you know, one more person who hadn't yet submitted his vote in to break that tie before we got.
And by the way, that was one of those. You want to talk about one of those years where it's like, yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah.
So we had the AL Rookie of the Year and our Baseball America Rookie of the Year, the NL Rookie of the Year, and the guy who is our consensus number one prospect this year, who, let's just make clear, everyone knows could have played last year in the majors. Mm-hmm. And probably given Otani a pretty good run for AL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, those three that are coming up for your Eloy, Vladdy, and Tatis. Those three are all going to be in the major leagues this year, barring injury. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be in the majors for a long time. This year, I mean.
Yeah.
Compare that to the wave we had last year with Acuna, Soto, and Otani. And it's just stupid, the level of talent that is coming into the majors at such a young age in such a short span of time. It's hard to fathom.
Yeah.
I can't come up with enough superlatives to tell you what we're witnessing right now.
No, it is exciting. And you mentioned Eloy and Tatis, and I want to get down the list throughout this conversation, but I think it's worth talking about here, especially since you guys are here.
That was a good debate.
Yeah, and because you guys both voted for different people for 2 and 3, Eloy and Tatis Swift. JJ, I believe you had Eloy number 2. Josh, you had Fernando Tatis number 2. This is obviously closer than the debate for number 1, but really quickly, can you guys just give me your pitch for your guy at number 2? JJ, I guess you can take this one to start.
We are the anti-ESPN, or this is the anti-Skip, especially the old days of Skip and Stephen A. Because mm-hmm. I thought it was very close, and the more I think about it, I'm actually happy with the way we turned it out.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that...
If you haven't seen the list, we'll go ahead and spoil it. Tatis is number 2, Eloy is number 3.
That's a flip, because yeah. I believe that last year we had Eloy ahead, and which may seem strange, because Eloy Jimenez did about everything that you could do offensively. He was hurt a little bit, but other than that.
I mean, my reasons for putting Tatis over Eloy were pretty simple. Or he plays shortstop, and he plays it well enough to stay there. And also, he ended the year with the broken, I want to say, hand or something. He's going off in the Dominican League right now, the Winter League. So it tells me that he's healed up and this is not going to affect him long term, or it doesn't appear that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll take the middle infielder over the corner outfielder and possibly a guy who has to move out of corner outfield.
Right. I think that you could fairly say that Eloy has more offensive potential.
Yeah.
But that said, if Tatis can be a grade worse hitter and a grade worse in power than Eloy, he could do that and still be a more valuable player because mm-hmm. you're getting that from solid shortstop defense. And again, eventually, he's a big guy. If eventually he's gotten faster since he became a pro, if at age 28 he moves to third base, he's still going to be really good there. Whereas Eloy, who keeps getting bigger, and I don't mean this is not a Billy Butler going back a few years kind of getting bigger, but but he is getting larger and larger. He's just a massive man.
Remember, these players we're talking about are still so young. They're not done growing.
Mm-hmm.
These are not men yet.
But so with that being the case, and he's already, he's a fringe average defender in left field at best. So he's a left fielder is not going to provide much defensive value. And then eventually a DH or first baseman, maybe. Well, yeah, you take the shortstop.
Yeah, no doubt. And if you look through our top 10, there are not a ton of pitchers there. Pitchers in general are a little bit riskier. You've talked about this at length. I'm sure both of you have, either on Twitter, the podcast, and different stories on Baseball America. But I know I couldn't skip Forrest Whitley without Josh maybe throwing a fit or even leaving the room. He's our top-ranked pitcher. I think Josh is the highest of anyone in the office, at least as far as I'm aware of. But with Whitley, and the other pitcher in our top 10 is Jesus Luzardo with the Athletics. But with Whitley, was he the obvious top arm in this top 100 list for us, Josh?
I think it was an easier call for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had similar careers, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Lizardo gets lost, I think, because he didn't have the God mode that Whitley did in the Fall League.
Mm-hmm.
But all year, he's, 20 years old? He went all the way to AAA. He probably could make a run at some innings in the big leagues this year, depending on how risky the A's want to get with him. But his season, if you took Vlad out of the equation, it would have been a nice argument between Lizardo would have had a case for minor league player of the year. Wander Franco would have had a case for minor league player of the year. The argument wouldn't have taken 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm saying probably 85 to 90% of the players on this list.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this before.
Yeah.
Jose Fernandez in 2011, Forrest Whitley October 2008.
The pitchers, right?
Pitchers.
Okay, pitchers. Because I was going to say, you and Ronald Acuna.
Obviously, the stuff speaks for itself. Is it just as simple as the stuff is that good and that well-rounded?
Changeup is a 70. You could talk about a slider being a 6 or a 7. I mean, Jay-Z said it best. The boy's got more sixes than first grade. We didn't talk about Wander Franco.
Thumbs up on the Jay-Z
Yeah. We can't talk about every single
Wander Franco,
Let's
whether
talk
you like
about
it or not.
Franco. Number four, he was outside of this top three tier that we were just discussing.
Yeah, I mean, this is young Franco.
Wander Franco.
just to coach as his hit tool is, I called JJ into my office yesterday to take a look at some video of Wander Franco. That is how rare that happens. Mm-hmm. I saw him five games total. Much better numbers in that league than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who tore that league to shreds.
In rookie ball, in his first season as a 17-year-old, to be this high on this list.
Precedent is probably too strong with guys in the past, but like we were very aggressive with Vlad Jr. when he went up to 20. I think it was like he went from the 90s to 20. And then last year he was in the top, in the top three, number one discussion. But what Franco did is so unusual that I really struggle to come up with a guy who kind of did that. Like, he was really too young for that league by most standards.
He was more than 3 years younger than the average hitter in the league.
More than 3 years younger than the average hitter or pitcher pitchers he was facing in the league. Mm-hmm. If he'd have spent the whole year, which would have been absurd, but if he'd have spent the whole year in the GCL, that would have been a semi-aggressive assignment, because most July 2 signees, the best ones like him often do this, but most go to the DSL the first year and they're in the Appy League, but it really to be by far the best player in the league. Bowling Green or Port Charlotte, because I don't know if Bowling Green is
necessarily a Bowling Green, but the Midwest League is the weather.
Burr, it's going to be cold.
It's going to be freezing.
But other than that, I know I talked to a scout last year, IA, at that moment.
I mean, let's put it this way. He's going to be 18th right now and announce that pick. There's some good players in this class, but Wander, darn near close. You just, every day you see something with him that you DC, and I gasped. I said five for five, and it's hit for the cycle with two home runs.
Yeah, he put up some gaudy numbers. That's pretty outstanding. But kind of moving down the list, I'd say one of the guys who surprised me to Robles, and he's a guy that I got to dig into a little bit more as I did the Nationals top 30 for our prospect. Robles is a guy who we had talked about kind of in comparison with Joe Adell previously within the office. Kind of the league, he's a guy who misses the top 10 just barely at number 11, but they're worse soon this year. So it's not to knock him, and number 11 on this list is very impressive, but brought up that maybe had to do with dropping him a little bit.
We'll have a piece of this hopefully up tomorrow. But the thing that jumps out, and one of the pieces of this, many pieces of information as we can to put together all these lists. And when I say that, we're as ourselves as we can. We're going to get every piece of analytics information. Like I always like to say, that we and the prospect community at large does not get our much higher than it was 10, 15 years ago, because there's a lot more information. But one of the things we were able to get, because he got to the big leagues, as a starting point was, 82.3, 83. It 2 years now, standing for the research and all, it stabilizes pretty quickly. And say, hey, how much of a concern should we be concerned about this? Well, his minor league exit velos aren't that much different than that. So, okay, that doesn't go early, but like a guy like Ender Inciarte has exit velos a little bit better. He's very young. He's had injuries. We would expect that he's going to consist several miles an hour. That puts you in the Ender Inciarte range, which is base running, the ability to get on base because he crowds the plate, which also makes him a little injury prone because he gets hit. Talking about these other guys that he is mixed with, he is the bells of the world. Everyone else that we're talking about really impacts the baseball. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it was a fascinating conversation, and you probably could be tricked if you just looked at his a news story begins to unfold a little bit. But let's kind of keep moving down the list and move into some of these second tier absolute studs. You get further into the list, there are some guys who come up that have some maybe 30 range on our list. There are a few pitchers that you can maybe critique a little bit more. And obviously, we've talked about it before. We'll continue to talk about it. Guys like Alex Reyes, Mitch Keller, Michael Kopech. Remember, there's just a fascinating conversation when we were all tier arms up. And what are you kind of looking for to have these guys separate themselves?
Well,
once he gets one out in the big leagues this year, he's no longer a prospect. Mm. But it was an oblique this year, I think. He's had the TJ, and that's all it is for him. The stuff is very, very good, but he just hasn't stayed healthy for an extended period of time. Michael Kopech last year, he made a breakthrough with his changeup at AAA and got to the big leagues, and the only thing that could stop him was rain and then his elbow blowing up. But you know, you have to wait another year to see him. And then Keller is a little different. More on the further development of that third pitch changeup. The fastball in that upper echelon. And by ranking him where we did, I think we collectively as a group...
How much injuries like this, Michael Kopech, how much does that actually drop you when you've got guys that have the stuff that he does with the track?
I think you have to fall at least a little bit till we see her on the mound again and healthy and throwing the same, because examples of guys, I mean, the last time I studied it, the last time I've read other people studying it, you're looking at 15%, maybe 20%, but let's say 10 to 15% of guys who have TJ do not report. Now, some of that is you have guys who unfortunately blow out again. I mean, Jared Parker, was a premium prospect. And then when you say could not stay healthy, I mean, it was, I believe, multiple TJs, if I remember correctly.
Johnny Venters, for very long increments.
All right, well, let's keep moving down then. We haven't talked about any catchers to this point. Kiebert Ruiz is the top catcher on this list. Check out the list to find out exactly. Francisco Mejia were guys that were in that conversation. Danny Jensen a little bit further behind that. Fascinating discussion for me because I actually got to see Joey Bart in person kind of before the draft with Georgia Tech when he came up and played in the ACC here around the triangle. And I feel like theirs for each are very fascinating, especially when you kind of see how catchers have been getting and the offensive numbers that catchers have posted at the major league level recently as levels being at this point. So kind of what is the argument for Joey Bart and for Francisco Mejia at
Georgia Tech? I saw all I need, a good chunk of what I needed based on the video you shot of him this year.
Yeah.
And what struck out to me was just how much of a warrior he is behind the plate. That guy has absolutely no fear. He took a ball off his shin at some point during the game, obviously in pain, but for the rest of that game, he was nose in the dirt, blocking, receivingly. He was inexplicably in the Salem Kaiser the rest of the season to hit 13 home runs. But, you know, the rigors of a full minor league season and eventually major league season.
And yeah, and the kind of conviction you have in Bart's defensive ability and his odds to stick at catcher, whereas Mejia, full-time moving forward. So how much does that hurt a guy like Mejia's value if he has to move from up?
End up. I wanted to put you on the spot for a second.
Yeah, let's do
it. One of the best catching prospects in pro baseball, top catching prospect in college, easy pick, I think, as the number one prospect in the draft.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think that's a
Bobby Witt fan.
I know you are.
Wouldn't put a huge gulf, but yes, I see your point.
I'm again, illness that was not going to have any long term ramifications, but he missed number one. I think he is, his resume already
is very impressive.
I've already put on the resume Bart and Rutschman. Is Rutschman heads and shoulders above, you know,
if they were in the same class? Most people would favor Rutschman. I think he's just that special of a prospect. I think question the hit tool. Is it going to be an average hit tool? Is it going to be more of a fringe average hit tool where he gets to some value with that power? Maybe a tick less power. But the conviction that you can have in Adley Rutschman's hit tool based on much more confident that Adley's going to hit than Joey Bart is going to hit. And because I think they're...
But Rutschman also, with Oregon State and CNT, he has the...
He's handled plenty of arms. Bart's kind of still working up through that, and he'll continue to handle better, right? That's kind of what separates him from Bart, at least in this discussion amongst
Correct.
Those two.
He's a hitter no matter what. If you had the choice at the top of that draft, do you take Rutschman or do you?
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at where the number one, the guys who were drafted number one, Casey Mize, he's not in that conversation. And I want the shortstop.
Wander Franco.
All right.
I mean, like if we were doing the
hypotheticals, let's
crazier.
Go.
I'll make it crazier. Okay. All of a sudden, we're gonna make the 2018 list eligible again. Okay? So, obviously Juan Soto, who was, I think, 9 on that list, moves up higher if we're re-ranking it. But if you, knowing what we know now, but so last year we were debating Acuna, Vlad, and Ohtani. Vlad, obviously, all those guys helped themselves this past year. Soto, Eloy, Tatis, Wander. Josh, you get one of those guys. You get one of those guys that basically you're betting on their career.
Give me the prodigy, Acuna.
I figured that was
going to be I'm looking right at him in this podcast booth. He's the best position player prospect I've ever seen.
The cover he has up. But what about you, Carl?
Of that group, I mean, I was thinking of it beforehand. I think I would have to lean Acuna too, just because even if he doesn't have the bat that Vlad does, I like the supplemental tools that he has, his ability to play center field or a good corner if he's going to continue staying there. I like his all-around tool set better and his defensive profile. Wander is tempting, honestly, just because if he can stick in the infield and he has the bat that we all think he does, like, that's a...
Juan Soto, who had as good a season as we pretty much will ever see in our lifetimes for a teenager in the big leagues.
I mean, we've already seen it in our lifetime, Carlos and I, we've seen another pretty special 19-year-old who also played for the Nationals, so...
Soto was better.
It was better. I'm just saying.
Soto was better.
We've seen some special ones.
I'm saying, but yeah. Soto was better. But, okay, so, I mean, again, like my soft spot is for I watched Andrew Jones, a 17-year-old. The next year I'm watching him hit homers.
So is this a Juan Soto versus a Wander Franco?
No, Juan Soto versus Vlad Jr. Because in this case, I get it with Acuna. You can make the argument with the defensive value. But Juan Soto versus Vlad Jr., you're basically saying – the two best young pure hit. And again, like when we had this debate last year, we were debating Vlad, who is coming off of where he peaked at before he graduated.
Yeah, he was behind Robles at the
time. The GCL at the time. But now knowing what we know,
I feel like it's tempting to take. I don't want to knock Vladdy for not doing that because we all know.
But you're not knocking Vladdy. And you know what? I'll take Soto because it's really, really, really hard to block out. You can. I feel there's a lot of cool things that I've gotten to do at BA. I think any rehabs.
Congrats, Josh. That's
awesome. That was unbelievable to hear. Yeah. That,
folks, then they got there was a rainout.
No, it was a series of rainouts. I was supposed to go a couple days earlier.
I believe you're concerned.
I got there. It was a doubleheader. It was game. It was he played the first game. He went two games. So it was like, all right, he's getting a day, whatever. And then at some point after the game, he got promoted to the Nats. And then you're talking to the Nats people the next day, and they're like, I don't think he's coming back.
That's the thing I remember talking to you that next day, and you're like, the impression I get is this is not just he's filling in. This is a say goodbye, you're not seeing him again, which all the credit in the world to the Nats front office for looking at a dude who had basically at that point less than 2 months of full season ball under his belt in his career. And they said, from high A to the big leagues, yep, it's ready to go.
Because if you think that this guy is that talented, but you pull the trigger that early and you expose it, and he fails in the big leagues, the risk is massive to what you can do to a guy's self-confidence and career development if you screw with him at that age.
I think what it's going to do instead is, we talk about the game keeps getting younger, it's going to empower and embolden teams to do this down the road again. Like, because what we saw, again, he's special, but what we saw there is Juan Soto immediately with, again, I can't emphasize this enough, ever soon now. No, the great guys always have been rushed. Why? Because they're just too good for the leagues they're in. Juan Soto was pushed with almost no minor league experience, and it's like, nope, there's just not a league. There's yet to be a league created that is too advanced for him. I come back to, we had the, if they'd have left Vlad Jr. in Double A all year, we would have seen, like, can he hit 400? But if they'd have started Vlad last year in the big leagues, I have very little worry that he would not be able to figure out his way to hitting, for average.
Here's a question I'll throw at you guys, just out of nowhere to see. Over under on total minor league games played by Juan Soto, 150.
It was under.
Oh, Josh is confident. Comes in confident.
131.
122. So you guys are both the money.
There was a stat that's impressive. I had last counting home games. He didn't have enough time to get his mail forwarded.
All right. Well, that was another guy who was interesting to talk about that I want to jump down. Kind of in the middle of this list is Vidal Brujan. There were a few guys who were very high on him. I think Ben Badler is the highest on Brujan. I wish he was here. Middle infielders who are kind of fascinating to talk about. I think Brujan is one of them. The question I had, I don't want to speak for him, but talk to me about Vidal Brujan, JJ.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think
since we're talking about him, he comes in at number 64.
Right. Me with him is especially, okay, the Rays have 1,000 second basemen mm-hmm. right now. At the big league level, you have, okay, you have Christian Arroyo can play second base, and some of them, Brandon Lau came up at the end of the year, and then you have Kian Wong at AAA. But the thing that stands out about Bruján is most of those, but their main attribute is they can hit in mm-hmm. second base, which is true kind of who has enough arm to, you know, make the throw from when you shift him into right field. Mm-hmm. But it's an offensive position. I think Bruján is really like, he's a second baseman, but I think he's athletically, he's better than that. Again, he could be a really good second baseman, but I also think that he could be a really good center fielder. I think that there's a chance that he could actually play shortstop mm-hmm. still. I think that there's enough there that he, if they wanted to try that, it wouldn't be crazy to say that he could do that. And then you throw on top of that, you're talking about not just speed, but speed that plays on the base path. You're talking about a really advanced bat. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So potential pop-up guy, you heard it here first.
I guess
you can't be a pop-up guy if you're arguing.
People argue that Wander Franco at 90, whatever he was last year, to number four has the skill set we're talking about. He can field. He has double plus or better speed, a little bit of power.
Career high 9 home runs this year between two leagues.
If he shows it consistently, mm-hmm. we're talking about someone who could be special in among a lot of very good prospects.
Not the top. Closer to the majors than Wander Franco, and I don't think he's pulling Wander Franco out of that number one spot with a crowbar.
Well, so. Wander could just jump into the major leagues. Yeah. He could go all the way. He can pull a Soto and do that. But the point is, you could be talking about an elite prospect mm-hmm. very quickly. Which, and I want to give a scout, I'm not going to name his name, credit, called me 2 years ago out of the blue and said, keep an eye on this Vidal Bruján character. Because he caught my eye.
Yeah.
And this scout, when someone catches his eye, you listen. Because mm-hmm. he's good.
There you go.
He's got an eye, like, it, Superman wants his eyes.
Well, shout out to the unnamed scout. Congrats on hitting that one. But
the thing I wanted to kind of, it might be a good way, because we've been going for a while, to kind of put a bow on this, that stands out with the Rays, with this is that the Rays and the Padres, I mean, we've been doing this for 30 mm-hmm. years, and the Rays and the Padres tied the record this year. They each had 9. The Braves had 8, which is kind of crazy. So basically, more than 25% of the top 100 is limited to 3 teams, which mm-hmm. I will point out also, the Rays and Padres having 9 each is really impressive. The Braves have 8, and the Braves also had 8 last year, and the Braves also had 8 the year before that. Now, some of these, I mean, Mike Soroka has, you know, kind of set up camp on this list. There's some guys who have gotten comfortable being in the top 100. Yeah. But that's also, Ozzie Albies was on and has graduated. Sean Newcomb was on, has graduated. Ronald Acuna was on, has graduated. Dansby Swanson was on, has graduated. So it's not just the same guys. They haven't gone 8, 3 years in a row because the same guys have been on there 3 years in mm-hmm. a row. So that's really impressive. But you look at this Rays list and they not only have 9 guys on this list, but they is on the top 100. Mm-hmm. Some of those, you know, Nick Schnell could, McClanahan, you know, could look good as a starter this year. And all of a sudden we're talking about this list who you could consider as well. Padres kind of the same story. The Padres, after, like, they're deep systems. Mm-hmm. The Braves a little bit more like, okay, you have those 8. William Contreras, you know, is a guy who, to me, you can make a case, and then we can see Kyle Muller, and we can see there are some guys, but especially those Rays and Padres systems are just really, really good right now.
Yeah, no doubt. I wanted to tie in one other thing to the Vidal Bruján conversation we had, just because you wrote about it, JJ. I want to give you a chance to plug that if you want to. But Nick Madrigal is a guy who I feel like checks a lot of the same boxes that Bruján does. If you want to know more about Nick Madrigal and some of the concerns you might have for him moving forward, feel free to check out baseballamerica.com and read the entire piece that JJ outlined. It's pretty fascinating. But did you want to touch on that anymore or make any comparisons there with Madrigal, just the concerns we might have with him? Although, I should also mention he was safely on this top 100 list.
Safely on the top 100. And again, we have as much information as we can gather. Well, it's insane. It's always like, you know, there's that hour I didn't do this where I could have, you know, spent a little more. What we will know if we're talking a year from now that we don't know right, wrist, you know, during the college season last year, came back, you know, finished the season, sucks. But how much did that affect him? Because that can affect a guy.
Yeah.
Opposite field is your friend. If you're going to hit for high average, you have to be able to use the whole field. Mm-hmm. You know, the opposite field, center field gives you the ability to hit for average. Mm-hmm. And Nick Madrigal is at the same time, the pull field is also in baseball. No matter who you are, you have to be able to show that if you are challenged with a, which you're going to get challenged because everyone throws 95, you're going to show that I can do something with that and I'm going to make you pay for doing that because I want you to give me a fastball. Yeah. And last year in Pro Bowl, according to the spray charts compiled by minor league baseball stringers, Nick Madrigal had one hit to left field.
Yep. That's now, a little bit concerning.
Now, also, it's great to be able to hit to the opposite field, but at some point, if you can't pull it, defenses are going to start to shift you. And if they're going to play you there, your batting averages, your hit tool, is going to start to suffer. And unless Major League Baseball does something phenomenally stupid and outlaws the shift in any way, shape, or form, that's going to be a problem. One field approaches don't kill only pull hitters.
Exactly. Yeah, good point. And Josh, I'll let you jump in on this if you have any other players that we haven't talked about that maybe you want to mention, a guy towards the back of the list that we haven't touched on that you think maybe deserves some talking points here, or we can just wrap it up with that. We've talked about 30 minutes. It was fun, guys. But I want to give you both a chance to maybe mention another player, either a player near the back of the list or a guy who just missed who maybe has a chance if he does some things right this year with graduations.
I think we were lower on a guy like Luis Robert than maybe the rest of lists will say. I think this year was a weird year for him in that he was injured all the time, even when I tried to see him in the fall league. But the reports you get from the fall league were that this guy, you know, is a tool shed.
Yeah.
And if it all comes together, this could be, you know, the guy you spent $26 million on. Yeah. Is Robert.
All right, Robert
the
for
big
Josh.
Thing I wanna see, the big thing I want to see from him, I want him to be better defensively. Like, because that's the bat, I think we can explain away somewhat with the injuries, but at the same time, the surprise that we found, I think, pretty strongly last year was he was not that good defensively in center, and that's going to be part of his game. I mean, that's going to be, you know, the reports we got from multiple scouts were, you know, he's a little rough out there right now.
Yeah,
he's not as good as Blake Rutherford in center field right now, or especially as Luis Gonzalez,
Luis Gonzalez.
Yeah, Luis Gonzalez. You know, I got him and their shortstop who came up at the end of the season, went the same. But both of those guys were considered better defenders in center field. And Blake Rutherford's not a center fielder. So that's, I mean, Luis Robert's tools versus Blake Rutherford.
We mentioned him a little bit, but Alex Kirilloff. I mean, what a season. I think the year.
Yeah.
You keep talking about if Vladdy's not here, and I don't even want to consider a world where Vladdy's not
here. Well, he's not going to be here
doesn't bring
in the sense of eligible for these lists, but
Kirilloff missed an unbelievable season from Cedar Rapids to Fort Myers, and if he keeps doing that in a double A, I guess that's Pensacola now, and then Rochester, you're talking about another really special player.
I'm gonna miss the Twins having the train in Chattanooga.
Well, the train still exists.
I know,
it's just
we're not
it's the Reds.
Well, there you go. I think we kind of wrapped it up here. We appreciate you guys listening. If you haven't checked out the Top 100, definitely head to baseballamerica.com to check that out in its entirety. You can also check out a number of other stories that we've kind of rolled out with that, diving into some of these things, Nick Madrigal story. There's more coming as well. In addition to the minor league prospects, we've got college preview content coming out, headed up by Teddy Cahill, our college writer and his team. In addition to that, we had the Hall of Fame announcement that we didn't touch on, and I feel like for the sake of time, we probably won't touch on now. But if you want to find out more about the Hall of Fame class, unanimous Hall of Famer.
And I got to interject with that.
Go ahead, JJ. You're the boss.
So much fun with last night was, which we'll have two Hall of Famers as of next year because Jeter was Jorge Posada.
That's pretty decent.
I see a crazy idea, Bert, for down the road, which is what are the best top tens of Baseball America history, which is a frightening research project because if you think about it.
Well, now you put it out there, so you have to follow through or else you're going to get a lot of angry
1983
tweets.
1983 is the first ones, and we're in 2019, so that is 37 years of top 10s. Even if we just kept the top 10s. Mm-hmm. So that's 37 times let's just say 28, because we're not, that's a lot of top 10s.
There you go. So we have plenty of stuff that's been on the site recently, and JJ's got his 37-year top 10 research project coming up at some point in the untold future. For Josh, for JJ, I'm Carlos Palazzo. Thanks for listening, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.